In the light of the documents on ecumenism, it's a really big question to ask you. How do you sort of view the contemporary picture in regard to evangelization and evangelism in our relationship with non-Catholic Christian churches?
Yeah. It's really an extension of the same question of how dialogue relates to evangelization. And in a sense, our particular situation is that we live in a nation where there are a proliferation of Christian communities, but chiefly that we have to work and live alongside others. We have to engage in a relationship with others, but also we have a duty to evangelize. And really, I think the answer to the question is that these are not mutually exclusive things. I remember, just to put it simply, rather than going into a theology of the relationship, and to relate some of my own experience when I was parish priest in Erdington in Birmingham, was that there were four local ministers. They'd never had a Catholic before I came, but I don't like anything going on without my nose being stuck into it. So I turned up to this, and at first, there was a real coldness that came to me from the Pentecostal minister, who thought that it was quite all right that we'd had these things up to now without Catholics showing their face. But I was invited to come along by the United Reform minister. And in the end, actually, the story is that over the course of 6 years, we built a great friendship between us, and that the Pentecostal minister went from being very suspicious of me to coming along to me with bits of the Bible, asking me what my interpretation was, and we'd have a jolly time. Now, that process happened, and during that time, one of the things that changed was, one day we were discussing attitudes to Islam and to other religions. And the United Reform Minister said, oh, well, we're all worshipping the same God, it's all the same thing anyway, so we're just hands off. And immediately, the Pentecostal minister went for him. And one of the things he eventually said was that when he looked at the message of the gospel, the gospel doesn't challenge us to go and poach people from other churches, or doesn't call us to go and poach people, though he actually had plenty of Catholics in his congregation, I have to say, or to poach people from other religions. But our mission is to proclaim Jesus Christ. It's not to go out seeking to draw people from here and there and everywhere, but our mission is to proclaim Jesus Christ. The same Jesus Christ who offered salvation, but also coexisted alongside those who opposed him and would have nothing to do with him. Jesus Christ, who went over boundaries of culture, but never ceased to proclaim the kingdom of God. And there's a sort of tension within the life of Jesus that we see, where he does engage, in a sense, in a dialogue. But the result of his dialogue is always to draw people closer to God through him, through adhering to him. And when we were talking about this one day within that context, this particular Pentecostal minister said, so what I want is to see all of our churches full. In a sense, I don't want to come to the Catholics and nick some of yours, and I don't want you to come to mine and nick some of mine. We have a whole world around us that doesn't believe in Jesus Christ anymore and doesn't even understand when we talk about him. And we're worried about treading on each other's toes. The reality is, the field is huge, and the harvest is great. And so all hands to it. And in a sense, that's really where we are. If we go around worrying about whether we will offend this person or that person, then really that person is allowing themselves to be offended because they see a territory which is theirs, in a sense, rather than a field which is the world, which is God's. where the kingdom has to be, where that kingdom begins to arrive and will eventually come beyond it. Now, that, I think, is something of the understanding that I would have. That if we are working, all of us, for evangelization, who say that we believe in Jesus Christ, not only will that have, you know, the world is big enough for all of us, but also, if we engage with that process of evangelization, which is not just an evangelization of others, but has to start from the evangelization of myself, my personal conversion, then that's not going to separate us. That will actually draw us together. Because that, it's that personal conversion which brings about the true life of the Spirit within each one of us, which is a source of unity and not division. And so that's how I would say it.
Thank you. Could I build on what you've just been saying about, you mentioned the Pentecostal churches, and if we look globally, would you agree that where Christianity is strongest and most dynamic and most vibrant, most growing, it seems to be evangelical, or especially Pentecostal? So in Brazil, which, or in South America, which we could regard perhaps as Roman Catholics as our natural homeland, we are, if I could use the word, losing millions of adherents to Pentecostal churches. And likewise in Africa and in China, these are huge burgeoning movements. And allied to that, this personal conversion, would you agree that we perhaps haven't been able to achieve that personal conversion with our own Catholic people?
I think there's a lot of questions in there, and looking globally is great, but it's also happening in our back garden. You know, as I said, that Pentecostal church, I think about half of the people there were ex-Catholics. Now you say they are taking, for example, in Brazil, it's quite a movement away from the Catholic Church towards evangelical and Pentecostal groups. What you sort of hinted at there was that we had them, now they have them. But did we ever really have them, is the question. Because one of the things often is that we say, oh, you know, we'll say, how many Catholics are there in the world? Oh, 1.2 billion or whatever it is now. But of those, how many are actually Christian? You know? And this is really the question that is raised by Pope John Paul II. It says, how many of those people who belong to the church by name belong to Christ? And I think that this is one of the things that we become very worked up on. When we look at the way we work in the Catholic Church, we think, oh well, I must keep my numbers up. I must keep my numbers up in the school. I must keep my numbers up at mass attendance. You know, these are the things. We're very, very driven by that, even though we've actually failed completely in keeping those numbers up in most places. That can often be such a focus that we won't do anything new, and we won't do anything that will seek to actually claim a greater adherence from the people who do come. You know, mass can't be anything longer than however long it is. You know, it can't be any longer than an hour, otherwise people will complain, they'll moan, so it means I have to shorten my homily, and I can't mention this subject, and I can't mention that subject, and I can't mention that subject, because these things might offend people. So, you know, I can't mention Satan, I can't mention hell, I can't mention abortion, I can't mention contraception, I can't mention any of these things. So let me just keep to a message which will offend nobody, and we shall try to keep to a mass that's no longer than this. We'll have the same repertoire of 20 hymns that we had 20 years ago, etc. You know, we look at the way in which we are as the Catholic Church, and these are just the outward forms. These are the outward forms. And we can see how very, in a sense, we've become very comfortable with a certain way of being. And of course, we all like comfort because we don't like change. Naturally, every one of us, especially in our culture, is small c conservative. You know, however much we like to think of ourselves as being go ahead and dynamic and whatever, most of us don't like anything changing. You know, if something changes, we're the first to moan about it. And especially when it means that I have to lay my faith out before others and lay myself on the line. And so all of these things, in a sense, militate against us changing. I would say, and this is me speaking what the Pope's saying and what the Church saying, I would say that our parishes generally, and I've been a parish priest and I didn't do that much differently either, but our parishes generally have not changed since before the Second Vatican Council. Basically, our parishes are the same now as they were then. We run our parishes in much the same way. There's not a lot that's different. And the things that are different are the sort of liturgical things. But really, basically, we haven't changed the way we run a parish. And by running a parish, often these days, it's reduced down to actually having Mass. And that there isn't a lot else other than that in many, many smaller parishes. And particularly in working class areas. The life has, in a sense, we've so lost that sort of cultural way of speaking to people that the numbers are so low that keeping the Mass going is enough of a task. And so I think we have to be a bit radical in the way we look at the life of parishes, in the way that we look at how we work, how we operate. You know, the evangelical churches who have great success in drawing people in, draw them in with a very shallow gospel. It's a gospel of immediacy, it's a gospel of do this and that happens. There's very little real feeding of the human spirit, there's very little depth for the seed to grow. And there's a great phenomenon of what's called post-evangelicalism, where people become evangelicals and then 10 years later they've left it and given up on it, because it doesn't go any deeper. Now, they are very successful. But the reason why they're successful is every single evangelical Christian believes that it's their task to go out and evangelise to other people. How many Catholics actually think that it's their task to go out and evangelise other people? Oh yes, we'd all say that we have to give a good example and a different channel. And how many of our parishes are really geared towards drawing other people in? And especially if we only focus on the Mass, where somebody who isn't actually a Catholic is going to feel left out. What do you invite a non-Catholic to come to in a parish? In our parishes, what is the, come and experience Mass where you can't receive Holy Communion. You know, because this is your entry level experience of the Catholic Church. Well, so you go there for a couple of weeks. Now, unless you're really, really desperate to become a Catholic, then you probably won't even get on the Journey of Faith or RCIA program or whatever. And so we really need to look at how we have to reshape parishes in the contemporary context to truly respond to the situation that we have around us, rather than pretending we still live in the 50s. I'll come to you in a second. In a sense, we only have to look at the way our schools work. That we put children, all the Catholic children, baptised Catholic, go to the school. So we put them through the school, and at a certain age they will all receive First Holy Communion, at a certain age they will all receive confirmation. And in a sense, any good priests will seek to try to get them to come to Mass, and try to take the preparation seriously. But we really deal with them all as exactly the same, whether they're practicing, they could be taking part in everything from really good community families, or from somebody who's never darkened the door of the church since the day of the baptism. But we treat them all as the same. We sacramentalise them without seeking to evangelise them. We sacramentalise them, and then we provide the parents with what they want, which is a nice opportunity for the photos and the party and all the context of everything that goes with the First Holy Communion, without ever getting the parents and actually seeking to evangelise them, to evangelise their family life. Because effectively, most Catholics are living a practically pagan life. It's a life of practical paganism, because there's nothing that differentiates the way they live their life daily from the way people who don't believe in God live their lives. It's what Pope Benedict calls living. He picks up on the phrase from the Ephesians and says it's like living without God and without hope in the world. And that's exactly how a lot of people live. And there's no differentiation between their way of life and the way of life of others. Now, if we treat all of those people as though they are great Catholics, and these are the people, and so we give them the sacraments or whatever, then we bring everybody, we don't sort of raise them up, we drag everybody else down, effectively. We drag those who are good down, because we say, look, these people are exactly the same as you. You know, and so it's almost about belonging to a culture, belonging to a Catholic culture, belonging to a social organisation, rather than actually these sacraments being sacraments of faith. Now, if we deal with the sacraments, which are the ways by which we transmit the grace which draws people into faith, then, in a sense, what have we got left? And so I think it requires a real reassessment of how we act. In the past, the Catholic Church has been tremendous at reshaping what it did according to the context. So suddenly we have a new context of, in the 16th century, of newly discovered lands. So we go out with we send missionaries out there to go and make good Christians of these people. But today in our own land, we've ceased to have the ingenuity to re-Christianise our own culture. And we're always on the back foot, reacting to the latest fire, which this week is gay marriage. You know, another, next week it could be something else, you know. But we're always reacting and never being active. That's what I would say is the difference.
And let me ask, Father, what this substance was that you would have us consider, bring out from us, from our hearts. Because Vincent Nichols, now the Bishop of Arkansas, introduced Walk With Me, I don't know, a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been following it in our church. And on the 18th of March, this month, if I can read it, at baptism we receive the light of Christ. This light, the light of the Spirit, enables us to radiate the fruits and gifts of the Spirit. This light is the goodness of God, and we thank God for this blessing. If we pretend that it is our own light, our own goodness and work, we deceive ourselves and walk in the darkness. Be prepared to witness God's light in your life. Be ready to give God the glory and not ourselves. On the 21st, yesterday, it says, it is said that an Englishman's home is his castle. But is it? We are proud and protective of all that we own and possess. But the question is, do we have a Christian, a gospel vision of property and possession? Be warned, it is a radical one, for in Christ we are united and belong to each other. In the light of this, all human goods, our property, our possessions, share a universal and common purpose. Everything we own or possess is meant to be used in a way that brings benefit to the whole human family. I think I've been taking on board that you've been saying, asking us to do just this.
Mm.
And I would suggest that in our diocese and around the country, Walk With Me has been followed daily, leading us up to Easter. Isn't that what evangelization is all about?
Mm.
Coming from within ourselves,
yep.
The individual person.
It starts with an individual's turning towards Jesus Christ. Because without that, and this is what Pope Pius XI was saying, without that, then there's nothing can come after it. You can't cut a section out. You can't put on all the... You could put on all the programs, all the schemes that you like. You could have, you know, you could say, right, in our parish we're going to put on this and we're going to evangelise. But without the personal conversion that comes from us first, we're lost. Because that's the absolute first necessity. Just on another point there, just something which came to my mind. Last week, I understand you were hearing about the hermeneutic of continuity. And that hermeneutic of continuity is something which is essential to understanding John Paul II and Benedict XVI, where there is a continuity of organic development between the Church before the Second Vatican Council, through the Second Vatican Council into now. And there are two groups that really stand out against the hermeneutic of continuity. There are those who seek to oppose it because they think that the Church should assimilate to the culture around it, and there are those who think that we should escape from the culture around us and end up in nostalgia, probably turn the clock back to the 1950s and live as though we're in that context. Both of those are really belong to what's called the hermeneutic of discontinuity or rupture, because both of them believe the Second Vatican Council was a big mistake or didn't go far enough. Either way, it's not good enough. In a sense, the radical centre ground is the hermeneutic of continuity. And in a sense, what we see within evangelisation is this understanding that some people will say, well, the Church's mission today should be to assimilate to the world, and we should be like the world around us. In other words, we should just be speaking secular values to a secular world with a sort of religious gloss, and maybe not too much of a religious gloss, because even that will become assimilated to the world around us. What does it offer? Very little. On the other side, you've got those who would just simply like to pretend that the whole thing never happened and that the world around us isn't really happening, to anathematise everybody out there and to seek to find the glories of a past era in here. And that also doesn't work. The flight from the world and becoming like the world, neither of these work. It's the radical middle, which is really belonging to this hermeneutic of continuity, which is we belong in the world, but we bear to the world a message of salvation. And we bear it not because we've heard it, or because somebody's convinced us of it, but because we carry it. Because it has already changed us, so therefore we have the capacity to change the world. Which is exactly where I think those passages that you read out are coming from. I mean, effectively, what we do is we give God permission to use me as his instrument as he wishes. Thank you for your insight. One more question.
I worked in the drawn office, and I've always been a good sort of practicing Catholic, but a private one. And on one occasion, this uncouth welder appeared on the shop floor, and he'd always speak to you while he's eating his food. But he was preaching Christianity, albeit in a very basic way, and many flaws in it. But that man gathered something like 15 people around him, and the energy that he was given to the people, they were even trying to convert the customers we had coming around the factory. Now, obviously, to get the Catholic Church to think in these terms that you've got to go out, as opposed to having a tradition of you've got to come in, I mean, just ordinary Catholics, it's going to be a hard task. Mm. And I agree with you, we have had several missions here, and they've been very, very successful. But there's been no follow-on to take it forward. Mm. And the fear that it was taking on too much and we couldn't handle it.
One of the things I mentioned before was the movements within the Church. And we see that there are movements in the Church which really have captured that missionary spirit. But the problem is, very often those movements challenge, if you like, the institutional and inward-looking, comfortable element of the Church, so that we think, oh no, that's weird, that's strange, that's dangerously conservative, or that's the... And we say, oh no, well, it can't possibly be the answer. I'm looking for the answer, but that can't be the answer, and that can't be the answer, because they're all flawed. Well, effectively, everything we do, you said about that man's message being flawed, but the thing is, everything we ultimately do is going to be flawed by our own personality, but God can still work through it. And I think that is really the message of really the Incarnation, is that God can work through any openness that we have to going out to others. And one of the things about the Second Vatican Council was but very much like Lumen Gentium, is an inward-looking document, because it looks at the constitution of the Church, whether we would say ad intra, on its inside, and then mentions how the Church then goes out on mission to people in foreign lands. But it doesn't deal with this, and that's why this, I say, is the completion of the project of the Second Vatican Council. And it was really, just coming back to Vincent Nichols, Archbishop Nichols, it was he who, when he first came to the diocese here, insisted that everything he did, I mean, you could criticise what he did or whatever, you know, a lot of people do, but the thing is that underneath it, he said, this is the most important thing, that we have communion. That's the Church as it is on the inside. Now, I think we do communion pretty well. We do community quite well. Where we do it well, we do it well. But then it also needs to be mission. And that's really what we don't yet do well.